WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. The time now is 1 p.m. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind coming up.
Ben Starr and Kevin O'Donohue here with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to try and help you lead a more positively minded life. And if you tune in last week, I started the show on a personal note, wishing my mother a happy birthday. I don't usually like to get a little too personal on the air, but I have to start the show again, Kevin, on a personal note, because today is my grandfather's 90th birthday.
90.
And I just want to wish him a happy birthday as well. Send him some love. And you know something? It's actually very timely, because today we're going to talk about a subject that really is closely associated with that generation. You know, my grandfather grew up, came of age against the backdrop of the Great Depression and World War II. And these were really significant experiences that shaped a whole generation's way of living and seeing the world. And what we're talking about today is a really heavy topic, and it's called hoarding, right? Mm. Hoarding. They made a whole TV show out of it. A whole industry cropped up around hoarding removal services. But a lot of this hoarding came out of a generation that had to learn how to get by with very little during the Depression. There was so much poverty, it was so pervasive, that people learned to save things, to repurpose things, to hold on to things, to just get by. And then World War II, of course, with the rationing. Everything was scarce. Yeah. So holding on to things became a virtue. Waste was sacrilege. Mm-hmm. And that generation...
How about your grandfather? Does he have some of these traits? I mean,
if you took a walk around his basement, you might be inclined to agree. But his home is very livable.
Yeah.
When you look around the basement, there's all kinds of stuff.
Right.
And I'm sure much of it quite useful.
Sure.
But this generation then obviously, you know, raised their kids. And their kids were imprinted with a lot of this mentality. Their kids then had kids. And, you know, maybe some of that was passed down. What about you, Kevin? Was that present in your family, that Great Depression, World War II mentality?
Sure. And I'm sure I have it. We do have it. I have a lot of siblings. And I think we all are conservatives about using energy, wasting food, wasting clothing, using things to the max, and especially like one thing that shows up is turning off the lights all the time.
Right.
You know, actually leaving the house and then going back to turn off the lights. I mean, it's really just kind of obsessive quality to it.
So from a mental health perspective, is hoarding an obsessive trait? Where does it fall in the spectrum of mental health?
It is a compulsion.
Right.
So we call OCD. I mean, most people know about obsessive compulsive disorder. And not all hoarders are obsessive compulsive. They are compulsive. And so, you know, they have a lot of things in common with people who have OCD. OCD, we'll talk more about OCD later. But in terms of mental health, you know, this is the kind of observable behavior where you could definitely get a sense that a person is not well. You know, last week we talked about the psychopath, and they're very beguiling psychopaths. We don't really necessarily always know we're in the presence of a psychopath. And with Kent Robinshaw, we parsed out the qualities that make a psychopath. And yes, we do know when we're in the presence of one after a period of time when they exhibit these traits. With hoarding, you walk into their environment and you can see very clearly there's something wrong here, even though they might seem to be perfectly adjusted, perfectly at peace, not anxious, very well adjusted.
Outside of the home.
Even outside the home, but even in the home. I mean, when you watch the hoarder show, right, you can see these people that are fairly relaxed until they start taking away some items. Then you can see some panic and some anxiety. And so I think most my colleagues think, it's very rooted in an anxiety disorder.
Right. And there was a time where, you know, research on this is actually relatively recent. As recently as the 1990s, there wasn't a whole lot of research and understanding of this condition. And initially, it was thought to be an expression, a manifestation of obsessive-compulsive disorder.
Sure. It used to be lined up with that. But that's now, when the DSM was very in its early stages.
Right.
In 1974, I think it was the first year of the DSM.
Yeah. So now we've done a little more research in it, and we know that it's not exclusively in the domain of OCD. And there may even be a genetic component. And hoarding is associated with things like difficulty processing information, difficulty making decisions, yep. right? What mm-hmm. to keep, what to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
Difficulty with attention focus. Inability, again, decision-making difficulties when confronted with large amounts of information. And difficulty categorizing. And so this is really a pervasive problem, and it's so hard to understand how pervasive it is, because it's something that's hidden, right? It's in the privacy of the home.
Yeah, frequently people who are hoarders will draw the blinds, draw the curtains.
Right.
You know, not let people see in their homes.
Now, you know who sees this firsthand more than anyone else? Are cable technicians.
No,
because
sure.
they spend all day going inside of people's homes.
Fire department,
absolutely. Yeah. Electricians, plumbers.
Yeah.
People whose job involves entering homes all day.
Yes.
And if you know anyone who's in, you know, this kind of line of work, just ask them and they'll tell you it's astonishing. Mm. You wouldn't believe how some people are living, and it's very sad, because this is a real mental health condition that people need help with.
Yeah.
And it's such an emotional thing for some people to separate themselves from the stuff. Because the stuff represents memories or history or emotions. Letting go of it is almost like letting go of a part of themselves. And so today we want to hash that out a bit more, talk about what hoarding is about, where it comes from, how to help somebody who's struggling with this.
And we should say how we came upon this idea, right?
Yeah.
We talked about spring cleaning, you know, it was like 80-something degrees on Sunday, and we, you know, here spring showed up in a burst.
Right.
And, you know, we both were sharing about how we're cleaning, you know, how stuff is disappearing, you know, we're discarding so much stuff from our homes.
Sure, yeah.
That we thought we should do a show on spring cleaning.
I wouldn't say I'm clinically a hoarder, Kevin, but when I was doing spring cleaning, I was coming across things that were really just useless. And things that I had been holding on to for years. Like I had a project that I did when I was in grade school, when I was 8 years old. And, you know, and I looked at it, and the memory was nice. But at the same time, I thought, this isn't serving me. And so what I did was I took a shoebox, and I said, anything that can fit in this shoebox,
mm-hmm.
I'll keep as a memory to look back on later.
Yeah.
Anything that's too big to fit in the shoebox, you know, I'm just going to let it go. I'm going to throw it out. I'm going to recycle it.
Mm.
So inside the shoebox, I have things like photographs, ticket stubs from different events that I've been to over the years, notes, postcards that people wrote me, you know.
Okay.
I'm reminded of
so
that
what
old...
So what kind of stuff did you throw out?
You name it. All kinds of stuff.
Clothes? Did you throw out clothes?
No, I donated clothes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I donated a big bag.
But you removed
clothing.
A bunch of clothes.
Yeah.
Okay, how about papers? How about...
Papers. So many papers, Kevin.
Yeah.
And, you know, in some cases, like, for example, I had set up my electric bill to be automatically debited from my bank account.
Smart move.
A while back. But I never did the paperless option, so I kept receiving bills, even though they were being paid.
Yeah.
And so I had like a stack of Con Ed bills going back to 2013.
Right.
You know, that were, I just never dealt with it. And I realized, you know, this is actually getting in the way of my life. This is getting in the way of, you know, living a an organized, neat, and, you know, productive lifestyle.
Because paper is a classic symptom.
Sure.
It's a classic trait of the hoarder. You know, they'll hoard papers, periodicals, newspapers, books, journals, all types of printed material that, you know, they'll cling to because it's like, oh, there's useful information in there. I need to learn that. I haven't quite learned that yet. And so, you know, hoarders typically will hoard very typical things like tools. Sometimes, you know, you have six screwdrivers, six electric screwdrivers. That's a hoarder. They're hoarding.
Yeah.
That's not a collection. Different than collecting.
You only need two screwdrivers. You need a Phillips head and a flathead.
Right.
And maybe
and all screwdrivers come with both now.
So. A few different sizes for each, but, you know, that's pretty much it.
So it brings up a good point. We should distinguish between collecting and hoarding.
Sure.
You know, because every kid, every mother knows my kid is a hoarder. You know, if you walk into a kid's bedroom or something, you'll see one type of item, like trucks for boys or dolls for girls, and they want the same thing year in and year out.
Baseball cards, action figures.
Different, you know, but you know it's not pathological. 90% of kids, they said, 91% of kids are collectors between the ages of 6 and 10. I was a collector, of course.
Sure. What'd you collect?
Little automatic race cars.
Okay.
And baseball cards. So, amongst other things, I'm sure I'd, if I thought about it. But you know, a grown adult having six screwdrivers, you know, or 10 wrenches, you know, or, you know, my father holding on to, you know, his power drills, you know, or actually his circular saws. My father had 11 circular saws. You know, that was his form of hoarding.
11?
11 of them. You know, so it's a form of hoarding, but, you know, we need to distinguish hoarding is something that happens in livable spaces. So you mentioned your grandfather's basement. If you're cluttered in the basement, then it's not
considered hoarding. There's a corridor that goes through it, but then, you know, on either side of the corridor, it's just a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, that's okay. You know, it's when it interferes with life, and we call it clinically significant distress. So if your kitchen is loaded up with pots and you can't use the stove, you're a hoarder. You know, if your bathroom and your bathtub is filled with clothes and stuff and you can't take showers. So it's this.
It's when it starts to infringe on your everyday life.
And of course, when the fire department comes. And this is the way to, as we see in the TV show, this is the way to get hoarders to comply by saying, you know, you're in violation of the fire code. If the fire department comes in here, they're at risk. So you have to clean this up.
So we have estimates that as many as 1 in 50 people struggle with severe hoarding.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think someone who just has a few too many pots on the stove is necessarily a severe hoarder. But what we mean by a severe hoarding is, like you said, when the bathtub full of clothes and, you know, there's obstructions and you can't get around the home, that's getting into a severe territory. And when you think about 1 in 50, then everyone knows someone or is somehow tangentially related to somebody who's struggling with this. And it's difficult because it's not a visible problem if you're not in the home.
Mm-hmm.
And so you think about a relative or a friend who never lets you inside the home. When you go meet them, they're always waiting for you outside. That could be one of the signs.
Sure.
Right? There's this embarrassment.
Or somebody who says, my dining room table, I can't eat at my dining room table because I have so much stuff on there.
Yep.
You know, there it is. There's this, there's a sign. And again, it's anxiety. There's an anxiety running it. There's an anxiety behind it. 50%.
Right. Especially around the decision making.
Yeah. Well, 75% of people who have a hoarding disorder have an anxiety disorder. 75 and 50% have a depression.
Right. You know? And the anxiety is related to making choices. It's much easier, instead of making the choice to hold on to something or throw it away, it's much easier to just delay the decision and think, I'll get to that later, put it away somewhere, And this is kind of how it starts.
That's the kind of that's where it grows. Go ahead. Yeah, that's where it grows into a depression.
You're listening to The Positive Mind. We're on 99.5 FM WBAI. It's that time of year. A lot of you out there are doing spring cleaning, and we're talking about that in relation to the phenomenon known as hoarding, which has become really moved to the forefront of, you know, mental health and popular culture in recent years, thanks largely in part to the show Hoarders, that I'm sure many of you have seen. I don't know if they must have done 10 seasons of that show.
It's, I think, going into its seventh season.
Yeah.
So, like you say, whole industries have been brought up around this. I mean, people go in and clean out the hoarder's home, but that doesn't really fix the problem. You know, we all think as viewers, oh, you know, they just need a little help. Let's clean up the place. No, it begins again. Once the truck is loaded up and people leave, unless the person is treated, unless the anxiety is treated and challenged, then the hoarding will begin again. And so when you look at a hoarder, and maybe we should take the call, Ben, do you know a hoarder? Because the people often in these shows don't look depressed. I mean, if you saw them out on the street, you might not think they're depressed. But once you grab a piece of paper from their living room or you take out a trash bag, you can see the anxiety mount. You see the need for them to leave the environment. Then you see the disorder. So the question is, do you know hoarders? Do you know a hoarder? Do you know a collector? But do you know a hoarder in your life? And can you see the depression in there? Because I think when I watch the show, I can see the depression. There's a kind of loss in the people. You can see the loss. And that's what depression is. There is a loss. There is a grief. There's a mourning.
Believe it or not, Kevin, hoarding has come to be associated actually with perfectionism, because people are so concerned that they're going to make the wrong decision, so afraid of making a mistake and getting rid of the wrong thing, that they just keep everything.
Yes.
And the stuff, the possessions, the physical items, the material things become a security blanket, become a place to take comfort in.
Ironically, they become companions, because the hoarder, it starts out small, and then the hoarder is starting to realize, oh, I am socially unacceptable. Nobody can come into my home. You know, it becomes the family is abandoning me, my husband and my wife. I mean, talk about legitimate grounds for a divorce. If your partner starts to develop a hoarding personality disorder, you know, that is, you know, accepted in the courts right away as reason for a divorce. So family starts leaving. And then the shame, you know, they know, you know, the hoarder knows that they're in some kind of distress. They just never address the stress. They never address the anxiety. They never address the depression until it's, you know, 20 years in. Typically, hoarding has its roots in childhood. You can see it, and they pinpoint it to between the ages of 11 and 15. But people don't get treatment for it until they're in their 50s.
Right. And I think what you just said, Kevin, how this onset happens between 11 and 15, could really explain why so many people in that older generation, right, the greatest generation, they're called the greatest generation as well as the silent generation. Mm-hmm. These are just like labels. We talked about millennials recently. These are labels for our older generations.
Yeah.
Greatest depression, greatest generation being people who were of military age in World War II, silent generation being people who were a little too young.
Yeah.
Those generations that grew up, that had those formative years in the Depression, in World War II, when rationing was strict, they had to really learn how to get by, how to survive, using whatever was available, whether it was for food, clothing. Everyone had to figure out how to stretch resources to the limit to take care of everyone else.
So what is the best strategy for an 11-year-old to make mommy and daddy happy? I'm going to be the best hoarder.
Right.
I'm going to be the best, you know, so nothing, protector, yeah, nothing, protector of things, the least waster of all the children. I'm going to be the one. And so there's that perfectionism that gets in there. You know, I'm going to do this so well to keep the family together.
And nothing was ever thrown out in those difficult times, which informed an entire generation's view of stuff and possessions, right? Why throw it out? You know, that it might be useful someday. No one knew when
that was a virtue.
Know, in the midst of, you know, the Great Depression, no one knew when it was going to end. Same with the war. No one knew when the war was going to end and rationing was going to return to normal. So there became this survival instinct of just hold on to everything. And I really believe, Kevin, that, you know, the people who had to live through that took that on as a coping mechanism and then sort of passed it down, in a sense, to their kids.
Yeah, but it doesn't become a disorder or an illness, you know. You might be genetically disposed for it to be to grow into an illness. But for sure, Ben, you're saying something that's really true. 50% of hoarders have a genetic component that they've inherited that has lent them this way. So you're right, you know. But once it trips over into a disorder, a mental illness, you can be treated the most severely as a child and still not, you know, develop a mental illness. There's something that pushes a hoarder over the edge, and they're rooting that in some kind of trauma in childhood. So some kind of loss, some experience of grief in childhood, in addition to having a genetic or ancestral component, is what preordains a kind of hoarder behavior.
And this is something that we've spoken to a lot of middle-aged people about in recent days. We've asked some people about their parents and the idea of hoarding. And there's a lot of people out there in their 40s, 50s, and 60s who see this in their parents, and it's extremely painful.
Mm.
It's extremely painful to watch it happening.
Yeah.
Whether it's watching it in slow motion over the years or just suddenly discovering one day after not walking into mom and dad's house for however, mm-hmm. you know, however much time that, you know, the place is packed to the gills with stuff.
Yeah.
You know, people want to know how they can help loved ones and relatives out of this. And I'd say the first thing is you have to at least acknowledge respectfully that, you know, it's... The impulse is to judge, right? What are you doing? How can you live like this? Getting frustrated, raising your voice.
And people have to take time outs. You know, people have to, because it's a recurring thing. You know, you can face it for, let's say, 10 minutes and then have to leave and then come back for 10 minutes and then leave and come back and leave. You know, it's the kind of thing in another person that pushes you to the edge. I'm caring. I'm compassionate. I want to help. But their persistence, their stubbornness, their justification, their perfectionism is so resilient, so entrenched that family members, caretakers, people that are with these hoarders get rebuffed and they need to step back and regroup. Even the professionals on the hoarder show, we see them that they have to take timeouts. You know, they have to revisit. Okay, you're not ready to throw out this stack of papers. How about this garbage bag over here? You know, how about, okay, we're not ready to do the living room. How about we do the kitchen? You know, how about this microwave that is not functioning? It's not working. Can we start with that? You know, so the...
Are we going to fix it or are we going to get rid of it? Well, you know, it's fixable.
Right.
Well, how long have we had it?
Yes.
15 years.
Yeah. No, it doesn't matter. I want to keep that.
Right.
No, that was given to me by my great aunt.
Item by item, when we go through and really ask... What do you plan to use this for? When's the last time you used it?
No, that doesn't work. I'm sorry to say. No, it really doesn't. What works is you say, you know, value. What do you value? Do you value your children? First of all, you have the fire department excuse. You know, you have the fire department. You're going to be violated and taken out of your home. So this seems to work. You know, there is the... But then it becomes, you know, your children. You know, you're alienating your children. And they have to go slow. Like... How do you envision this room functioning? Let's start small. What do you think would be the first step? And they have to be part of the process. You can't persuade a hoarder. Once they know, once they hear you trying to persuade them, it's like a reason. Oh, you're trying to reason with me? No, I'm not going to give in to you. So, you know, logic and reason will not work. You have to work hand in hand with them.
Towards the emotional side.
And go slow, yeah.
Yeah.
And so cognitive behavioral work also comes in there. As you progress. But first, I would say, let's create a discrepancy. This is what you have. This is what you say you want. Now let's work together to try and get you what you want. So that's called motivational interviewing and motivational work. You create this discrepancy. And then so you go towards the values. Do you value your children? Yes. Would you like to have dinner with your children in this room someday? Yes. What do we have to do to make this room, you know, functional for your children to come over or your grandchildren to come over? You know, so yes, you want to go towards emotions, but very slowly, because they are skilled and practiced at burying all of their emotions. That's one thing you see in the show. Their emotions are totally neutered.
It's a very emotional topic and a very emotional situation. And believe it or not, hoarding was only classified as a mental health disorder 4 years ago.
Yeah, in the DSM-4.
2013.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
but it's in the anxiety section of the DSM.
Yeah.
So it is clearly rooted in anxiety. And some, you know, we've done shows on anxiety and the imbalance of the amygdala. And this, I believe it's the insula cortex on the side of both the left and right side of the brain is under stimulated. MRIs have shown this for hoarders. It's understimulated. And so they can't distinguish between what's essential and what's not essential, what's relevant, what's not relevant. So these MRIs are really helping in the diagnosis. But yes, it's a very recent diagnostic number, and it's rooted in the anxiety. So you can just see it in taking things away. Then the anxiety starts rising, you know. And then, you know, Armand would say, you know, get them angry. Anger is a great motivator for getting things done. How about you and your cleaning up? I mean, you say you spent some time. How's it going? How's the cleaning going?
Well, I'll tell you, Kevin, a lot of this cleaning is stuff that I really postponed for so long, and getting started was really the hardest part. Once I started making some headway and seeing the progress,
yeah,
it became almost impossible to stop.
Really?
You know, and I work 3 jobs, including the work that I do here at Positive Mind.
Sure.
I work 7 days a week, but I've been coming home every day and putting in an hour, 2 hours, and just neat tidying things up. But we found an interesting story here. Apparently, this is a famous New York City story. There were 2 brothers known as the Collier brothers.
Yes.
And they lived in a building at 128th Street and 5th Avenue. And they were famous because they were like some of the first famous compulsive hoarders. They had all kinds of stuff, you know, books, furniture, all kinds of items that, you know, they just accumulated
over
years and years. Yeah. And they actually booby-trapped their house because they didn't want anyone coming in. And they actually found them dead in the home.
Oh, yeah.
And the home had over like 300,000 pounds of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's very, very sad. It's very sad. There was a novel written. There is a novel about that by Doctorow, E.L. Doctorow, I believe. So it's very sad. But there's an example. In apartments, people can't see into your apartment, at least in a house. You know, there are ways to see into different rooms. So for these gentlemen, you know, nobody could see. And the superintendent finally had to get a court order to go into the apartment. But, you know, of course it never would have passed fire code 30, 40 years ago. This was long in the process. So there it is. Something that must have started when they were young, maybe genetic, since they both could tolerate it, develops in its 20s, shows clear signs of distress in your 30s, and then you typically get treatment in your late 50s. Here they were in their 80s, I believe. They lived a long life.
Yeah.
But they never got treated. They never. So it's a very, very sad story. But there are plenty of these stories out there. I mean, one telltale sign would also often be bathrooms. If you go into, you know, you can sense it. You know, you have this sort of disgust reaction that the hoarder doesn't have. They don't. And a burgeoning example would be start with the bathroom. See what that looks like.
Sure.
Then go to the kitchen.
Okay. We're going to be taking your calls here at 212-757-5555. Do you struggle with hoarding? Or are you related to someone, you have a loved one that you've watched go through this? Do you know somebody out there? Or is this something that you've dealt with? Or are you just doing spring cleaning and you want to talk about how it makes you feel? The number is 212-757-5555. We're going to take a short musical break, and we'll be back after this with your calls. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
Jack Wilkins doing Red Clay here on 99.5 FM WBAI. You're listening to The Positive Mind, and we're talking about compulsive hoarding because it's that spring cleaning time of year. We thought we'd mention it. We have a caller on the line, Rose. You there?
I'm on. I turned my radio down.
Hi, Rose.
Yeah, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
I've been listening lately a little bit more.
Terrific.
And I know I was going to Armand's place, and I never... I heard about it from someone who had worked there when Armand died, you know.
Okay.
I felt so bad, he was a wonderful guy. I'm going to say that you mentioned that, like, I don't have an internet. I'm 93 and a half, incidentally, so I'm not the hoarder.
So do you have a lot of stuff around, Rose?
No, I'm not the one.
Okay.
I was speaking. In fact, if you look in this living room where I sleep in, because I'm sharing this apartment, the person I'm asking about, I always wanted them to go find out where people go, you know, to get some help. And
it's a good question. I mean, has this been a problem he's had for a while?
Yes.
Yeah,
because I didn't know it at first. He's not as old as I am.
Now, can you see the anxiety in him, Rose?
Yes.
So you can see that.
Yes,
so,
because
you know,
once you've had some therapy yourself, you don't look at people and be a wise guy and think, I'm going to... But you quietly can understand that there is enough of a problem that someone needs to go to get some help.
And you see that in him. He can always call us. But there are plenty of places that deal with anxiety. And he can get a diagnosis.
Like what you said about, because he forgets too, and he's in the 60s. Early 60s.
So
when you said about the underactive,
insular part of the cortex, insular cortex part,
because for his age, he shouldn't be forgetting, and he'll. But he came from Greece, and I remember his telling me that he would leave his room a mess, and his mother would clean it up.
So you can contact me at thepositivemind@wbai.org, or you can call us.
Sure. Now I wanted to know,
but obviously he's had this for a while.
Oh yeah, and I've been and I'm so patient, and telling someone to leave would be another homeless person who I don't know where he would try to go, but. So in the meantime, they take advantage of you because they know you're good. I'm a good person.
Yes,
you know?
I can tell that, Rose. You're calling on behalf of another person, so this is lovely. You can have him give us a call.
Who should he speak to?
He can speak to me, Kevin, at thepositivemind.com.
Yeah.
Nice to hear from you.
On the internet, what is the channel called?
It is called a hoarding disorder or an anxiety
That's
disorder.
That's what it's called.
Yes, it is.
But see, he would have to maybe go to the library and look
well,
there.
Of course he would. Sure.
Yeah.
Rose, I'm going to move on to another person.
Sure.
Keep calling us.
And everything you said is what... you can't make up your mind what to get rid of, right?
That's right. It's an indecisive
issue. It ends up too much. It stays there. And that is hoarding. I mean,
yes,
right?
It is.
That is hoarding.
Rose,
I understand. 93,
and
I,
and 90, 93 and a half, and you haven't hoarded anything all your life. Lucky you. All right, look, I'm going to take another call, Rose. Thanks for calling.
Sure, and
bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you, Rose.
Look at that calling.
212-757-5555. Always good to hear from Rose. That's the number to call, 212-757-5555. We are going to be taking your calls here. Just make sure that you have your radio turned down all the way and give us a call here at the center. We're taking your calls. We're talking about compulsive hoarding and spring cleaning, I guess, because it's that time of year. Let's take another call. We have a caller on the line. Hello there.
Hello. Can you turn off your radio, please?
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, we lost
him.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay.
All right.
Keep
Let's try
coming.
Another one.
So spring cleaning. Spring cleaning. You know, we couldn't avoid this topic because when you get a sense of clearing when you move stuff away from areas that you're supposed to use. Ben, who do we have?
Caller, could you turn your radio down, please?
I will.
Thank you.
When you move stuff away from areas that you're supposed to use. Ben, who do we have?
Caller, could you turn your radio down, please?
I will.
All right.
Hello. Hello, hello. You want to take the next guy?
Yeah, we'll have to take the next call.
Okay. Folks, we do have a lot of calls, and we see it. And as you know, we have this phone system that is so high-tech. You know, it's like the dawn of the Internet. It's so high-tech that we're transferring them from one place to another, and we see that we have more than seven calls. Go ahead.
We have another caller. Hello. Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Am I on the air?
You
yes.
are, sir. What's your name?
Daniel is my name, which is the real name.
Hello.
I'm hoping I'm not feeling too ashamed about it, but people probably who are listening, they probably know who this is. It's a great show. I hope you do a whole series on this, not just this one show.
Thank you.
It would be great.
Sure.
I guess I was kind of upset before because I didn't... I really resonated about you saying it can be a very serious part of mental illness. I mean, I hate to admit that, but and I know I've had this problem for years. I'm in my middle 60s now.
Okay.
Pretty seriously since 30.
Yeah. Yeah.
The biggest impact on me has been the social aspect. You know, of course, you mentioned
social.
You know, I haven't had company in years.
Wow.
My biggest thing that I talk about with people is loneliness and isolation.
Yes, of course.
So I know I can't get out of it. It's because I value, you know, I must have 10 bookshelves here with, you know, 6 feet tall. I value books. I value articles.
Yes. That is a type of the disorder. Hoarding books is a bibliotech disorder.
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
So,
well, I'm someone who, I have so many interests that I admitted recently that I just don't want to give them up.
Mm.
And yet, if I told you, you know, how much I would love to have company, it's kind of it's a catch-22.
Are you trying to get any kind of treatment, Dan?
Well, not with any specialists. I go to regular therapy, but uh-huh. I'm beginning to think I really need to find someone who is good with the behavioral part of this. So if you have any recommendations, I certainly would welcome them.
You can call the office at the end of the show, but group therapy is often a very good modality because you're suffering from social isolation in the first place. You're probably a ways away before you can talk directly about, you know, how this manifests. But being exposed to a group where you can slowly come forward and share this might be a way to go. Does your therapist recommend a group?
No, I don't think they know these types of things particularly.
Yeah.
How does that
sit with you being part of a group?
I was going to mention that the only thing that really helped years ago was I went to some self-help groups about this matter, and I found the sharing, you know, quite amazing.
Wow!
So that was helpful, and I could go again, but I don't seem to. It's almost like I've given up on it.
Well, I would say you need a systemic treatment. You need a clear goal. You need to have a really charted course of treatment. You might even need medication because frequently there's a depression underneath it. So if you're really serious about it, you want to see a therapist who's going to outline a course of treatment for you. You don't want to just take it session to session.
Yes, I understand.
So listen for the number at the end of the show and you can call me or, you know, there are other venues, but I'll talk to you if you have the time. Okay?
Sure. Thank you very much.
You
appreciate it.
Sure.
Thanks
right.
for the call.
Take care.
212-757-5555 is the number to call. and we're talking about hoarding. It is a very emotional subject. It's difficult to talk about, especially if, you know, you're someone who's actually struggling with this now. So we thank you for those of you who have decided to be vulnerable in talking about this. It looks like we just lost a caller. Please call us back, 212-757-5555. Again, we're working with a new phone system here at the Positive Mind Center, and we're excited because it allows us to take more calls, but we're still learning, so please be patient.
We're only 2 weeks into this, so we are excited about it. And the good thing about it is that we'll be able to get callers like Dan, people who are suffering with it directly in the future, without taking up our whole phone system.
Let's take another call. Hi, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, guys.
Hi, what's your name?
My name is Enver. That's E-N-V-E-R.
Hi, Enver. Thanks for calling us today.
First-time caller, long-time listener. So I appreciate you, what you guys are doing.
Thank you. Love to have you. So how do you know? Do you know a hoarder, or does this resonate with you on some level?
Absolutely. My wife is the perfect example. And we're trying to teach my three-year-old daughter not to be one. Which is a challenge because, you know, she's 3 years old. We'll buy so much toys at that age. You know, we have friends giving her toys. We buy her toys.
Yes. So you
perfect
see
example
it.
Was perfect example was yesterday. We bought her. We were shopping, and all of a sudden she picked up a toy, and I just looked at my wife and I said, "What are you doing?" She has so much stuff at home. She doesn't need anymore. So we're trying to teach her that. So I was wanting to ask you, how do we do it, you know, as a couple? Because she is the one, my wife herself, she needs to get rid of that. She needs to get over that anxiety.
You can, Well, it's way too early to know how this is going to develop. Obviously, in the future, if it does develop, an MRI will show up some indices. But is she able to share? I mean, I would encourage her to share, because that's one of the features of collecting things. The difference between a collector and a hoarder is that the collector is able to share. And if she's not able to share yet, then that would be a sign. But she's way too young for her to have any kind of diagnosis with this. But it's good that you're looking out. So encourage the sharing part of it. And also, you might try other items. If she's really keyed in on soft toys, you might try and you know, buy her a different type of toy. Let her pick it, but try and get her to choose another item. It's getting away from what is a typical kind of item she's buying. Typically, for girls, it's a soft. For boys, it's trucks or dinosaurs, you know. But for girls, it's usually dolls and soft toys. So those are two ways I would recommend. Try to have her have a play date come over and to share things and see how she's doing with that. If it is a problem, then you might want to bring her in or have her seek some treatment with her mother first of all. So
Her mother?
Yes, one-on-one with mom and the daughter, not the dad. Let the mom go to therapy with her if that's ever needed. But I would try these two things first. Does she seem like an anxious child?
I wouldn't call it anxious. I'm not the type of parent that likes to just put a diagnosis on my child, you know, especially at that young age.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, she's very has a lot of energy. She does share from what her teachers have taught me. She does like to share. She's very compassionate to all the kids around her, which is a good sign.
Okay.
So it's just on that aspect. And the reason why I brought it up was because I grew up in the islands, and we grew up with so little. My house was always clean, even though it was, it looked dirty from the outside, but it was always clean. It was always peaceful. And the little that we had, we cherished it. So much because that's all we had.
Yeah,
is to have a toy, and that was my toy for a year or two. So I used to clean it. I used to wash. Yeah. I mean, I kept it clean and neat.
Yeah.
So seeing coming to this country, seeing so many things in abundance, you know, it's like, oh my God, I can have all this stuff.
Yeah.
But then as a grown up, I started, you know, educating myself more. It's like I don't need so much. My family never, well, you know, brought me up this way. So I'm trying to pass that down to my child. So that's why, that's the reason of my call.
Yeah, well, thank you for calling. This brought up a lot of issues for us. So we'll keep investigating and tune into more. We might do some more shows on this.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you, Edward. Nice to talk with you.
Sure. Thanks for the call. 212-757-5555. We have time for maybe one or two more calls. We're trying to get to all of them. We're going to take another call right now. And thank everyone who has called in
also,
today. It's not easy to open up about this kind of thing, Kevin.
No, it's not easy. And it's beautiful to see parents concerned about their own. You know, one thing about collectors also is that they have a tremendous pride in what they're collecting,
sure,
as opposed to hoarders who are not proud.
Well, let's take another call.
Sure.
We have Nadine on the line. Hi, Nadine.
Hi, this is Nadine. Hi, Kevin. Hi, Ben.
Hey, Nadine. Nice to have you. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm very good. I'm very good. There are two important people in my life who collect a lot of things, and perhaps they're hoarding.
Yeah.
I grew up seeing my brother keep a lot of papers, and it was quite dysfunctional when we were kids.
Sure.
And all through his adolescence, he just couldn't clean up. He couldn't get the items off the ground. He couldn't keep the sheets on the bed, you know. And I know that he suffered from anxiety. I don't think he ever had any treatment, but it impacted all of us, you know.
Yeah.
So from my brother's experience, I learned to be compassionate and kind of tender with him. And my approach is, somebody's trying to call. And my approach is with him, and so with some of those experiences, I've moved forward, and I now love somebody who tends to hoard.
How about you? Do you have any tendency in this regard? Ben was talking about how it can be often genetic and passed down. How about other people in your family, starting with you?
I keep books, but I cycle them out. I donate things. I clean up. I move things along, and so.
Uh-huh.
I allow myself to keep only a certain amount of books, but I read a lot. I do it for professional and personal reasons, and so that's always going to be around, but I manage it and cycle things out. So there's no cluttering in the living spaces. Everything is arranged and functional, and I keep what I need. I keep sometimes more than what I need, but I let things go. And it's cyclical for me.
I know you, Nadine, as a book lover. I know you very well as a book lover.
Yes.
You might try with your brother. I mean, is he open to you helping him with this at all?
He's married now, and so I don't see him as much. And his wife helps him clean, but it's a source of tension. It's a sore spot. But I also wonder, I have like two things that I'm wondering about. One is how much of hoarding is related to seeking pleasure. It's painful to clean things out. It's painful to make a decision to let something go. And I know that with myself, maybe with my brother's wife too, we face the difficulties, we face the hard issues, we also balance our lives with things that feel good, we go out, we try to enjoy ourselves with our families, but we also clean up, we cook.
Yeah, you know, I would say it's a kind of substitute pleasure, it's not a real pleasure.
Yeah.
But like we were saying earlier, it's like a sort of companionship.
You know,
for somebody who might have a social awkwardness or even a social anxiety, It's a compensatory coping mechanism. So they'll take, there's definitely pleasure. I mean, they have pleasure in collecting these things, in hoarding. But it's not a genuine enlivening pleasure. I mean, do you see that in him? I mean, is he really enjoying
keeping all the stuff? I think he kind of gets lost with the work and with the papers. And you know, this is what I grew up seeing, that when he was old enough to get a job and he needed new socks, he couldn't find the socks that he has in his room. They're in the room, they're on the floor, they're under the papers, so he would go out and buy new socks.
Yes, it's a very, very common phenomenon with a hoarder. So some mechanism of his is compromised, and who knows, maybe he'll get this addressed. But nice to hear your voice again.
Thank you, Kevin. Same here.
Thanks for calling, Nadine. Be well.
Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye. So, Ben, your spring cleaning really spurred on a really fascinating and interesting topic. I thank you for bringing it to us.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It just seemed like the right topic at the right time. And, you know, it's like we heard from Dan, I think, said we should do a series. I think we could definitely...
I think so.
We could explore this further. There's a lot more to talk about that we didn't get to today.
Yeah.
And we'll get better at taking your calls. We thank you for those of you who did participate today. And remember, you can always send us an email at thepositivemind@wbai.org. You can reach us here at the center, 212-757-4488. We love to hear from you. We'll contact, you know, we'll reach out and try to respond to all of your inquiries, comments, ideas. And as always, we thank you for tuning in. We thank you for calling in. Kevin, I thank you for just being here today.
Thank you, Ben. I just enjoy your presence so much. Thank you for
being
here. All right.
So remember, we're here every Tuesday and Wednesday at 1, only on WBAI 99.5 FM. Stay tuned for the Artsy Fartsy Show with Barika Edwards in the 2 p.m. hour. We'll see you tomorrow, folks. Take care.